This is KSFS. San Francisco.
We'll make spears. Long spears, twice as long as a man.
That long? Right. Some men are longer than others.
Your mother been telling you stories about me again, eh?
Sports Outside the Mainstream with Owen Grohman, featuring Eamon Sweeney, Brian Peacock, and Antonio Kruger. Now, here's Owen Grohman.
Mr. Announcer Man. That was Robert Plant, not Owen Grohman. Anyway, Owen Grohman is here this week. We're back, Sports Outside the Mainstream. I'm joined this week by Antonio Kruger and Brian Peacock and no Eamon Sweeney, who's out there in God knows where. But either way, I think we're going to have a great show.
He's in Vegas.
Vegas, baby. Is he really?
Yeah.
Eamon in Vegas? What do you got, headphones? Just say it, dude. Just say it. Oh.
There we go.
Peacock's in.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we're this is San Francisco State University. We'll talk about production aspects of the show.
We will.
On the air.
And that was the DJ mic that was on instead of mic number three.
Wow. Wow, let's break it down.
I mean, I can literally break it down over there with the turntables if you want.
Yeah, hey, you know.
I can take us in and out of break.
Give a word to Cut C on that one. This guy knows what I'm talking about. But
can we open with a little Eamon humor? I mean, he is in Vegas. We got to make fun of him somehow.
Well, I was thinking that we'd open. I mean, not a lot happened this week. I was thinking maybe we'd do a show where we talk about our favorite sports movies of all time. Maybe do some reviews. You guys, you know, I mean, I don't know what to talk about.
What about our favorite date movies?
Yeah, I know. Either one.
Our favorite Owen Wilson movies.
Mm. You know what wasn't that good was... No, okay. I'm not even going to start with that. What are we doing?
Really,
I got caught up into it.
Yeah.
No, I really... You mean Dupree. I was about to talk about it. Anyway.
Wait, what's the hat, though?
This is Santa Barbara Foresters. This is a baseball team. I'll be doing a little... I'll be their play-by-play guy this summer. So
nice.
They gave me a hat. And actually, yeah. They gave me a hat.
We announced this last week so all your stalkers would know where to find you.
More or less. Yeah. But,
The hat looks like it's about 20 years old, though. That's what's
awesome
about
it. I like to beat them up. I'm sort of like... A lot of guys in the Red Sox do that. Manny Ramirez is known, you know, they beat up their helmet, they put pine tar all over it. A lot of ball players do that, so.
No, I'm the same way. You can probably smell my hat from here.
If you were wearing a hat, I can theoretically smell,
you can smell
the hat
from
that could
house,
be.
I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
On the hat rack, you can smell it still because that's how I roll with my hats as well.
Anyway, huge week in the Bay Area. Of course, we were just joking around the W's. We'll start with that, but Eamon in Vegas. I mean, it is kind of for anybody who's never seen Eamon, I mean, it's kind of a funny thought. He's a tall, lanky guy. He's got the praying mantis going on his head with the hair.
On Cinco de Mayo weekend with the
What's
fight.
What's he doing? Is he doing the fight?
No, he's just poor planning.
Oh, wow.
But I'm just imagining him, you know, what, maybe a trip to the Mustang Ranch or something like that. Looking for a little friendliness going
on. The dam.
We'll find out next week what or who he got into. But I'm thinking more in terms of, you know, I just don't want him to get his heart broken, you know.
I know Eamon's a great guy in the studio, and we've done some production work, and we've done some things together here at school, but I don't know what he's like outside, you know, sort of off the field. Is he one of those? Is he
Sometimes those are the ones that have secrets and skeletons.
I mean, is he making it rain right now?
Eamon, it's very possible. I mean, it really is. And if it is, I mean, Eamon, you know, if you've got the laptop going in the background and you're listening, could you just... have someone videotape it, and so we can put it on YouTube, upload it immediately, and we can all enjoy the vision of Eamon making it rain.
And if you're smart, drop some money on the NBA playoffs. I mean, after we talk about it, because we've been on with everything so far, so he ought to just follow as we've been doing, all four of us, drop some coin, and he'll make some money.
Just unbelievable what's going on, dude. I picked the Warriors. I don't know, Peacock, even if you ever heard that show, but... I legitimately picked the Warriors over the Mavericks in six, and Eamon on the spot tried to call me on doing the Buster Olney Cardinals Padres. Remember that?
You know
exactly what Eamon tries to bust me on that right away. Of you're just doing it because if they win, you look great, and if they lose, whatever, no big deal. But I really did. I really felt they were going to win, and I said that at the time. I really did. Obviously, it's predictions, so yeah, of course, I reserved a spot for I could be wrong. Of course, you could always be wrong, but I did pick that. That was a true pick. Now. On the downside, of course, and we'll get back to this series, but the Rockets-Jazz, I mean, hey, come on. The rest of my pick is the Rockets are going to win the whole thing. Does that look likely? Probably not. So I'm not a genius, but I do pick some things right once in a while.
And last week, this man here, Peacock, picked the Warriors. At this point, it was a 1-1 series, so we still didn't know how things were going to all fall out. pick them to win, pick them to win in the second round as well without even knowing who their opponent was going to be.
The Dubs?
And yeah. says that they're going to lose in the conference finals to the Spurs. So he's got his Western Conference selections down.
Really just an unbelievable series, though.
Oh, man. So fun to watch.
And
you feel like you're there, even if you're not there. You feel like you're there if you're a fan. I'm in my living room and I'm jumping off the couch. It's one of those series. And how great were the fans? The Bay Area fans were just appreciating every second of it.
And you know what? We're not the first, and that's been beaten. You know, it's kind of been beating a dead horse a little bit in the media about how great the fans have been, and that's a great thing. I think it's about time because I think back to the last day of the NBA regular season when the Warriors clinch, beat the Blazers, and I knew they were going to clinch. And I didn't spend a lot of time watching the game. I was doing other stuff that night, but I went. You know, I was on SportsCenter with the sound down as always, watching it at night, half watching. Never saw a clip of the Warriors, never saw an ounce of celebration. The Mariners and the Indians rained out again and nothing on the Warriors. Just like, come on, where's the love? Where are they talking about the Dubs? And nothing. But it's great now that it is, and it leads SportsCenter. The Warriors did it, that the fans are getting all that talk and all that play. I think it's great. It's really great.
It gives them legitimacy. Even if they had lost this series for some reason, making the playoffs, being on national television.
Making it rain.
There you go. It gives them legitimacy next season. Fans know who you are. You get a few more cable games. You do get a little bit more respect from the officials, if for nothing else because they've seen you play before. They know that Biedrins is a good shot blocker, so he'll get away with a few fouls over the course of a game. It also just gives them more experience. I mean, recalling that this team had a midseason trade, all these extra playoff games are just feeding on to next year's training camp. So when they open next year, they are that much more on the same page and ready to be a legit 50-win team that perhaps can get home court in the first round. They can be next year's Utah Jazz.
And there's a couple guys on the Warriors that have been getting snubbed when it comes to All-Star votes, too.
That's right.
Baron Davis, Jason Richardson, some guys like that have been close, and they just don't get the love. And you're going to see them gaining those votes right now with that primetime.
What do you always hear? Win something. Yeah. You know, make a playoff series, and then you'll get the respect. Well, you know what? They not only made it, they've won it. And we talked last week about how we knew Oracle was just going to be off the foundation. And I couldn't watch Friday's game, but I looked forward to Sunday. It made me so proud to be not only a Bay Area resident, but native, to see an hour before game time, people are chanting, "Let's go Warriors." And I think the Warriors are our one unique team in the Bay Area in that it brings Giants and A's fans, Raider and Niner fans all together for the same team. And unlike the Sharks, they've been here a lot longer, and obviously there's more of a basketball following throughout the Bay Area. You mix that with some East Coast transplants that root for the Warriors except for when they play their team, and you just see the passion of the fan base, but you also see the intelligence of the fan base, knowing how the game is played, knowing how critical this series was going to be, and that they believe they could actually impact the result. And quite honestly, they did, particularly on Sunday night's game.
And it really is a great basketball area. I mean, and I think that's an underrated thing because – obviously, the game was started by a bunch of Jewish New Yorker white guys back in the day, but, I mean, hey, where's basketball gone? Bill Russell's from Oakland. The Warriors in Philadelphia at the time were the first team to win an NBA championship, but they've done some stuff here in the Bay. Rick Barry, I mean, they got history. This is a great basketball town, and it's just so great. It's the first, in my opinion, the first good, real good feeling. And, Ant, you might disagree because you love the NBA probably much more than I do, but I mean, it's the first really great feeling I've gotten while watching basketball in a while. And it's been way too long. I feel like last year, you know, the Heat, the Mavericks, the refs, that was really the feeling I had in the final series. And none of the playoff series before really stand out in my memory. But this was just an unbelievable, unbelievable series. Great fun to watch. You get such a good feeling and a good vibe just watching it.
Well, number one, the Warriors are the legitimate Bay Area team. The fact that they opened during their time here playing in San Francisco at the Cow Palace.
Who played at the Cow Palace, that's Bay Area right there.
There you go. And then they played that one year in San Jose in the mid-90s when they were retrofitting the arena. So they've played in all three major cities at some point in their time here. I do disagree with you in the essence that I thought last year's NBA playoffs were great, but then I get into all the series and the fact that so many went seven and there were so many close games and overtime games. But it shows you how it changes when your local team is in it. Because even if it's not your team, to see fans and friends of yours at root get caught up in it and to see it be a story in the media every day in the newspaper, it makes it exciting. So for me, I've had fun, you know, the last 10 years being a Spurs fan, but to actually have my friends trying to go online and get tickets and hearing stories of people, you know, at the game and got friends who are losing their voice from cheering their hearts out all night, that's exciting.
Celebrities at courtside?
Yeah, what?
Never seen that.
Snoop Dogg last night,
Snoop,
man.
Snoop-a-loop.
Snoop's going to be on Conan tonight, I think. So I think.
Oh, okay. Well,
town.
Kate Hudson was there, and Woody Harrelson just looked stoned out of his mind.
Well, he was going to be in the Bay Area for, you know, I'm sure personal, you know, medical reasons.
Yeah, medical reasons.
Right, right. But just unbelievable. And this Warriors team, it's been a tale of two teams this year. I mean, starting with the run that we all talked about where they went, 16-5 to end the year. I mean, that wasn't an 8-seed team. That was a baller team. Those guys know how to play, and they are far from done.
Yet it also tells you something about the Mavericks, which for our listeners, you heard on this show for the last month, they're mentally fragile, and you saw it. They've been playing.
Confirmed, absolutely.
Yeah, they've been playing at top RPM all year, which in the regular season, when you got a good bench, you got good coaching, you can drop 55, 60, or in this case 67 wins because you're catching teams pre-trade, post-trade, injuries, back-to-back, all that kind of stuff. Now, can you focus, hunker down, 7-game series, and step your RPM up, if you will, something I'm stealing from Kenny Smith on TNT?
The Jet.
Exactly. And you know what? The Mavs couldn't. And it shows you it wouldn't have mattered. They either if the Warriors hadn't made the playoffs, let's say they had missed it by a game and this had been the Clippers instead, even had the Mavs gotten past them, they weren't going to get past the Houston-Utah winner or they weren't going to get past the San Antonio-Phoenix winner because they're just not strong enough. They don't have it. And you talk about last year, the reason why you probably didn't enjoy the NBA Finals is because Miami is not the best champ that we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. And on the Dallas side, they weren't the best team in the Western Conference. And all bias aside, they got there because the officials gave them games 3 and 4 against the Spurs in the second round. And it didn't hurt that Rajah Bell missed the majority of the Phoenix series. So Dallas wasn't even a legitimate best team in their own conference. And that's probably why the season ended with not the best taste in your mouth. What you saw now was the fraud being put to bed. And I think it's wonderful.
Well, that shows how you feel about it, because I feel a little bit that it was really... The Mavericks were the right team at the right time for the Warriors, and the Warriors were the wrong team at the wrong time for the Mavericks, if you follow what I'm saying. So I wouldn't go so far as to I haven't thought it through enough to analyze, well, would they have won or lost? I think a series with the Spurs, all things considered, including the officials, it would have gone, you know, it would have been difficult. Certainly that would never happen in the first round anyway, but I don't know. I just wonder, would this have happened to the Mavericks if they were facing a different team? And obviously, you know, we understand that the Warriors match up well with the Mavericks, so there is that. But would the Mavericks, I'm talking about the mental aspect, the failures that they had, the non-MVP-ness, if you will. Wow, that was horrible. MVP-ness of Dirk Nowitzki.
Not planned.
That was not planned. Wow. Would you think that could happen to anybody else?
I actually put some thought into this. Had the Lakers fallen to the 8th seed? The Mavs probably would have swept them, certainly beat them in 5. If the Clippers had made the playoffs as the 8th seed, Mavs probably disposed of them in 5, maybe 6. So you're right. On one hand, it's the perfect storm.
Right.
My larger point is that they aren't championship material. They would have been defeated by someone along the line, probably the San Antonio Phoenix winner, because they just don't have it. If you have it, you find a way to beat an 8th seed. And I know the Warriors aren't your normal 8th seed. But we heard that last year with the Kings, who were so great post-Artest trade, who went into the playoffs hot. All you heard was this is not your typical 8 seed, yet they were dispatched of 6 tough games with the Spurs, but still dispatched of. You go the year before, you had the Denver Nuggets making the playoffs as a 7 seed, and you hear this is not your typical 7 seed. Ever since George Karl became coach, they've only lost one home game. They're running, they're gunning, they're playing hard. They finished the season winning 10 out of 11. They were gone in 5 games. 5 competitive games, but nevertheless gone. When you are a 67-win team and you're playing a 42-win team, I don't care about the injuries. I don't care about the trade. They were a 42-40 team for a reason. The fact that they couldn't win one game in Oakland, you couldn't win one road game in a first-round series, you're a fraud. You are undeserving of being in the finals, winning the finals, which is why they will not be there. And we're all spared having to watch Mark Cuban cry for the next few weeks. But on the other hand, how beautiful that the big baby is gone, that Nowitzki showed when we talk about MVPs every year. Regular season stats are great, but when you watch the playoffs, who are the true MVPs? And Steve Nash is one. Tim Duncan is one. These are guys that make their teams better. They come through when it counts, and there you go.
You can tell how much Ant likes Dallas.
Big right. fan.
Yeah,
really big fan. Well, here, let me follow that up with, I actually sent an email sort of to myself in a weird way, but to our KSFS Sports when I wasn't here last week, and I said simply that I was talking about picks, which we never really made, but who cares? Everybody does that anyway. MVP, I said Steve Nash because he's truly deserving this year, and I said Dirk's too bad at defense, but my point was just that Dirk is the most vital cog in a machine, not the machine itself, which Nash is, and Kobe is, and LeBron is. And with the Spurs, they're, to their credit, a very well-built team where, you know, Duncan certainly, I mean, hey, I take an argument that he could be MVP, but they've got so many good things going for them, including great coaching and depth and things like that. So that doesn't really fit into that argument, but Dirk doesn't fit MVP for that reason, in my opinion, which is sort of a little follow to what you were saying, too.
Well, a few weeks ago, we once were recapping, or rather, I was recapping a Spurs regular season game.
During the San Antonio Spurs Minute brought to you by Equity Clocks.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
we were saying that there was a night the Spurs were in Seattle, and they were up like 20 points early second quarter, and Duncan hadn't taken a shot yet.
Right.
And we said the Mavericks could never have that be them with Dirk not having taken a shot. So in a sense, he is their MVP, and you saw in this series, when he didn't score, they didn't win. So in a way, even with the depth of Howard and all these scores on the roster and a team that has playoff experience and I still believe a very good head coach, when Dirk couldn't get it done, everything fell apart. Part of the problem, he doesn't have any other way to impact the game. He couldn't go in the post. He can't play great defense. He made a few plays with tipping out some offensive rebounds, but he didn't do anything from a leadership standpoint, an energy standpoint to alter the game. Steve Nash doesn't play defense either. I mean, he and Dirk are both horrible at it, but Nash doesn't have to score to impact the game. Duncan doesn't have to score to impact the game. They make everyone around them better. Duncan does it on both ends, which is one of the reasons he truly is an MVP. He holds the glue to that team together. Certainly, if Kobe had talent around him, I think we'd have a better idea. And we know that LeBron, without him, the Cavs aren't even a playoff team.
Right.
Dirk has been exposed a little bit.
And to borrow from the great Bill Simmons, who we both enjoy, and Peacock, yes. I'm not sure if you've ever enjoyed the work of Bill Simmons, very good writer for ESPN.com. He did, you know, he sort of said something along those lines as well. And what he said about Kobe was that it's true that he really only impacts the game by scoring, but he does it at such a high level that it is, I mean, yeah. he really, nobody can stop him from scoring. You can stop Dirk. The Warriors showed it.
Yes, so, you can. So. And, you know, he got babied a lot last year in the playoffs. Dirk did the game where he had the 27 free throws, whatever, against the Spurs being an example. It's one of the reasons that Bowen was always in his head, because Bowen can play tough with him. You saw Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson got to know him quite well in this series and got in his head. You saw last night Dirk was pushing off a lot with no call. He was getting quite frustrated, understandably. And I think it was on this show that we said when we previewed the playoffs, who would be the X factor for the Warriors? We know Barron's the best player. Who's the X factor? We said Steven Jackson, cold-blooded shooter, clutch shooter, has no conscience, has no fear of anything, obviously. And, man, 7-for-7 until he missed last night from three-point range. That is crazy.
Just feeling it, yeah.
The whole Warriors team is feeling it. When you watch this series, you get the feeling that, you know, Barron's the best player on the Warriors, and you got Josh Howard and you've got Dirk. But it's like the next best seven players were all Warriors.
Yeah,
it seemed like. I mean, there was some big moments from Stackhouse, some big moments from Jason Terry, but up and down the lineup, everybody the Warriors put in was just playing at a high level.
Yeah.
And there was no answer.
They see
Dallas.
That Maverick jersey, and all their shooters just feel like they can make every shot, which is kind of funny because the Mavs are known for playing good defense, but the Warriors just don't fear them at all, which shows you why it is important to beat teams when you get a chance to, because once someone thinks you can't beat them, they can play above themselves, and the Warriors did the whole series. Should have won it in five.
Yeah.
The biggest thing about the Warriors in that series is they showed after each loss that they came back, and not only did they beat the Mavs both times, they beat them bad.
And in the Warrior losses, it didn't look like, oh, the Mavs are the better team. Here comes the better team. It was never 1-8 like that. You know what I mean?
And Jackson, he gets thrown out of game two in Dallas and then comes out and the Warriors play ticked off and blow them out in game three. He gets thrown out of game five in Dallas. They come back home again, ticked off, and they once again, each time they lost a game in Dallas, they came back and won by double digits. That is impressive. Three of their victories in the series by double digits. How does that happen when you're a one seed? I mean, that's just, it's embarrassing, and it really does make it quite clear the better team won.
And that goes back to the tale of two teams. I mean, when they started to turn it around late in the year, that's the Warriors. That's the real team, and they're still playing at that level, but you guys touch on a couple things that I feel it's really important that we talk about. One is, you know, there's been airtime on this show by myself that I've spent ripping on Steven Jackson a little bit. And this series was really kind of a microcosm of everything that is Steven Jackson. He gets thrown out of the two games. He's walking off the court, and he just cannot shut up. And it's, you know, it's really tiresome and annoying. At the same time, he's a ball player. He's a very good basketball player. He's a guy that you want on your team. And the Pacers didn't because, you know, things got stale over there. But he is
the brawl played a part in that.
Such a great fit for Oakland and for the Warriors. And I won't say that my opinion of who he is, you know, I characterized him as one of my terms, a D-bag and things like that. And I'm not going to say anything about whether I feel that way about him as a person. But as a basketball player, it's done a 180 because I said here that he's a ball stopper and that he takes too many bad shots. But like you said, that can be a positive thing when you're shooting well, taking a lot of shots, that is. And so, you know, hearing from people like Reggie Miller, who I don't think is a great sportscaster but certainly has a lot of insight, and from Baron Davis, who's very, you know, a pretty bright guy and obviously very bright on a basketball court, who gives Jackson all that credit. And from Don Nelson. I mean, I've heard Don Nelson talk tons of times this year, and really nothing but positive things to say about Jackson in a realistic way, because Nelly always tells it how, as it is. He's not going to say he's a great player and great part of my team. He's going to say, well, he's kind of a bonehead. I wish he'd stop screwing around, and when it's time to get off the court and don't clap. But he's a hell of a player.
You weren't wrong to say that about him earlier in the season either, because that's how he was playing, and he was getting benched in favor of Monte Ellis. They were going to go even smaller, you know, and he became the sixth man for a while, and there as they became a different team, he became a different player, and he wasn't that black hole. It didn't have to be all about him. He was giving it up a little bit. He was dishing a little bit. He's playing hard, and that's things. The whole team gets it now, and they're all playing together, and it's a unit. Mm. Whereas earlier in the season, it was just five guys on the court,
and I think he is perfect for this system. Number one, the Warriors don't have a lot of defensive-minded players. He doesn't mind scrapping and playing defense. He enjoys it. And he has the sort of in-between size to play a guy like Dirk, but to also play smaller people. But he also likes to shoot. He is a shooter. And when he was in Atlanta a couple of years ago, it was his first year, it was 04 when he left the Spurs.
Right.
He actually had some games where he was consistently scoring 30 because the Hawks played a fast pace, and they were losing every night. But he showed that he can be a scorer. But he needed to be in a system that allowed that. Indiana under Rick Carlisle did not have that kind of system. Nelly is fine with you shooting open shots, but you also are right. He is a ball stopper. And last night I was thinking, watching the game, you saw both why Pop loved him on the roster and why Pop couldn't keep him around.
Yeah.
The three-point shooting was why he could be there, because it opened up the floor. The fact that he mixes it up and plays defense is why he was welcome there. The reason that they didn't go overboard to re-sign him, I think it was the end of the first quarter, where the Warriors were going to have the last possession of the quarter. Jackson goes up, takes a shot with about 8 seconds on the game clock, misses it, gets the offensive rebound, and then goes back up with it, misses again, gave the Mavs a chance to actually come down and score. And on the sidelines, you see Nelly stomping his foot and yelling, thinking, pull it out. And now, that wouldn't have happened if Barron had been in the game. That was when he was injured. But that was a boneheaded play. It was a poor possession. And if he played for San Antonio, he'd be sitting for the next quarter under Pop, who comes from this place of, if you're not going to do it right, you're not going to play. And that's Steven Jackson. So you have to kind of live with it. And under Nelly, it's perfect, because in Nelly's system, so, you know, that's just, you just free flow.
Yeah. And Jackson's one of those guys where it's sort of like, what makes him great also makes him terrible. And you characterized it well, but the emotion that he plays with, and how, I mean, I want to say he doesn't even really think when he's playing. You don't see a lot of brain power going on, but he plays hard defense. He plays real hard, and he plays well. And, you know, he strokes it when he feels like stroking it, and that's how you do, that's how you live, man.
He's one of those guys, if you foul him hard and you expect him to go off, he doesn't. He's like, you're not going to bait me. But then on the other hand, when one of his teammates gets pushed, he's ready to brawl, and you're like, calm down, Steven, you don't want to get ejected. And he doesn't have, once that switch is flipped, he doesn't have the ability to come back.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's a crazy, crazy guy.
And it makes it a little bit worse, because he has that reputation now, and and he definitely isn't going to get a call.
No, he needs to watch himself with the officials, just because, you're right, of that reputation. Yeah. Not just being a bad boy, but being someone who always has something to say to the refs. And these officials in the playoffs have been kind of across the board with handing out the techs, the ejections.
Yeah.
I've watched some official crews. They seem to call everything. And then there have been some other crews, both in different games that I've seen them, where they let every physicality go and let the players decide. And I don't know if this is certain refs trying to prove something to David Stern, or if this is just, you know, them feeling freer to be themselves. I have no idea.
Yeah, well, even though Jackson, I mean, he's not going to get a call, but he gets calls because he knows what he's doing. That's another great skill he has, is drawing fouls. I mean, he's really the only guy in the Dubs who does that consistently.
He's fearless. He is very much fearless.
And he's able, I mean, he acts it, but not in such a way that he's flopping. Like, he'll make sure the refs know he just got fouled. So, you know, it's a good skill to have as well. But
you'd want him to have your back if you got in a fight in the alley, because he would
crazy.
He'd dive in head first with no fear.
Yeah. But anyway, so Jackson's done great work for them. I think it's very important that we give a lot of credit to Don Nelson. I mean, just the way this has all worked out with Nelly. I mean, Let's look at this and think about that trade and where we stood on it at the time that it happened. And obviously the trade I'm talking about, Jackson Harrington, Indiana, you get rid of the white boys that Oakland doesn't like. You get the black guys that Indiana doesn't like, if you want to go racial with it. But
that's not too far off.
Yeah, I mean, hey, tell it like it is outside the mainstream, right? So anyway, where we stood on it was, is it just a swap of people, of players that certain teams are tired of? Is it really going to do anything for anybody? But Nelly, I don't know how much of a hand he had in the trade as it happened. I have a feeling, based on the respect that Chris Mullin has for him, that he probably had a fair amount. But the way that it all gelled and the way it all came together, I think Nelly just deserves a ton of credit, and he's been a great, fun personality to have around. Certainly, this whole thing with the Warriors wouldn't have happened without him. And at the same time, he's made it more fun. If you ever get a chance to listen to a Don Nelson interview, I mean, he's my favorite interview to listen to.
Yeah,
I mean, he talks about drinking scotch and I mean, he just tells it like it is. Like I said, he said earlier about Matt Barnes, who we should mention had a phenomenal series, did a great job.
Out of Sacramento.
Exactly. Matt Barnes, who obviously he loved being here in the Bay Area again. And Nelly said earlier in the year, he said, well, you know, he's not very smart, and you can tell because he's got a tattoo on his neck. But, you know, I think that he does some things for the team that I like. And I remember I also, I was working at KNBR at the time, so I was real close to the team in the first half of the year. Did a lot of Nelly interviews and editing and doing that. And I mean, he would just come on with these brutal scouting reports. I did three cuts. A brutal scouting report of Ike Diago since traded. He just said, he's got no hands, and if anybody double teams him, he's probably going to throw it away, and just on and on. And I kept thinking, like, is there any skill that Nelly hasn't ripped on him for not having yet? Like, he's just tearing him apart as a basketball player. And he does it on the air. And it's awesome. I mean, it's refreshing. Nelly,
but it's
just
consistent. It's so consistent. As a player, you're not being singled out.
Exactly.
You know, he's basically saying what the fans are saying.
Right. Like
what they're calling into the talk radio station saying, you know,
yeah,
Foyle's fat and you can't catch the ball. And basically,
he did want to foil as well.
Yeah. I was just remembering, the first day on the job, he comes in and he's like, well, first of all, he's way overweight and he's not going to get on the court. And so you're like, okay. And he didn't, you know.
It's
like,
yeah.
It's something I enjoy about Bill Parcells when he was coaching still in the NFL, and something I love about Greg Popovich. The answers are just blunt and truthful, and the response is, well, if you don't like what I said, change it. Then become a better passer, and I won't say you can't pass out of a double team. Well, lose some weight, and I won't call you overweight. I mean, are you going to debate the truth? So, no, I'm with you. This is a lot of this is about Nelly. He loves rosters of diverse guys to create mismatches. I think he likes that more than an established roster with a real one and a two and a four and a five and all that. And you're right. I think this trade was about him because you had Murphy with no foot speed and you had Dunleavy who had some quickness but couldn't shoot. And he needed players that could do a little bit of each. And, I mean, give credit to Mullen for being willing to pull the trigger, to Nelly for getting this group of guys together. And they really are a team. They really do. In this short period of time, they've all bonded. And that type of closeness and teamwork and having one another's back means a lot more than having home court advantage in a series.
I love the trade from the start. It was Dunleavy is brutal. Since the day he was drafted, was like, yeah, when is he going to show this
number three
Larry
overall
Bird
pick.
Talent that they've been talking?
Your whole
about.
Face so. Dropped when you said that, man.
Ugh. He was
just
painful
no, really, no thoughts of him. Really, I'm not even a Warriors fan. It almost depresses me a little bit to think of those days.
He played so weak, and he doesn't really have any skill that he was supposed to have to overcome this. Oh man, just to coach his kid that. It hurt to watch.
Yeah.
It really hurt to watch. I mean, I loved the trade from the start. Steven Jackson, it hurt a little bit to get him back, but I wasn't too worried about it because I knew he could play.
Right.
And it wasn't going to hurt him in the win-loss column.
Now, Peacock, you're diehard Warriors, right?
I mean, oh, yeah.
So now, 16 years since you won a series. I mean that's in and of itself. 16 years since the Warriors won a road playoff game. So we're talking about, I mean, we keep saying the 13 years since they were in it, but it's been 16 since you could advance into the month of May for the most part. A, how does it truly feel as a Warrior fan? And B, I'm a big believer that, you know, playoff series, the whole familiarity breeds contempt sort of thing. After six games of the Mavs, which Mavs players do you now have a little extra venom in your heart for that'll carry over into next season and beyond?
Actually, I don't have anything for any of the Mavs players. I thought they played hard and they played a good series, and there was a few little scrums here and there, but it was nothing major. And I have respect for all the Mavs players. I think Dirk is going to get hammered, and he has been getting hammered, and he might be getting a little bit of a raw deal because it was basically everyone just turned to Dirk and says, okay, you got to win this for us. You know, this is a bad matchup. And I mean, and he didn't do it, so that doesn't look good on his end. But Josh Howard, I like him more than I did going into the series. I appreciate him a lot. He's a great player.
He plays real good defense.
Yeah, I mean, he's a baller. He can do a lot for you. He's just not a super. He can't put the team on his back, and obviously Dirk can't either. And I have to say, going back to the Nelly thing, for him, you got to give him props for having the sack to go with a 6'9" center and a 6'6" power forward. You know, and I mean, it's the kind of thing that you would do in a fantasy world. And he's like, no, we're gonna really do that. And I believe in my guys, and the guys stepped up and play tough, and the undersized guys beating the oversized guys, and you love watching it. I don't know if they can keep up the pace that they're keeping up, and it's good that they have a few days off. They're not going to play maybe till Monday.
Monday.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. I remember when they beat Portland to get in the playoffs, someone mentioned that to him about going small, and his answer was, well, we weren't defensive rebounding the ball anyway, so I figured we might as well just go small and have some yeah, advantage.
Exactly.
See, that,
it's brilliant.
Those are the kind of things that, to me, I don't know. I mean, if you go as a player, as a coach, whatever, Don Nelson is a Hall of Fame NBA personality, in my opinion. I mean, he's just such a thinker, you know what I mean? And he's a great, fun guy to always have around. So all that said, I think that round two is a huge test for him, and we'll see who comes out, Rockets, Jazz. We can talk a little bit more about that after the break on we're having a great show already, guys. We've been going for half an hour. It feels like it's been like 3 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's just kind of how it happens, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sports Outside the Mainstream, Antonio Kruger, Brian Peacock, and myself, Owen Grohman, will return momentarily. Plenty more NBA playoffs. The NFL draft, Peacock is here after all.
Oh,
and trades.
We got to break that down.
And trades, kind of part of the draft, however you want to think about it. We'll do it all on KSFS, The State.
Radio.
This is John Paul. Make sure to check out Rock Block every Monday from 9 to noon on KSFS The State. Yeah.
Citizens of this nation, a terrible catastrophe has destroyed the foundation of our society. It is with great urgency that we recommend you seek refuge in the nearest bomb shelter or theater. More information will be broadcast as soon as a safe means of communication can be established. Until then, good luck and may God...
This is KSFS, San Francisco.
Bass.
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 You know who it is. You know what it is.
It only takes a moment of your time. 4 minutes.
I've been informed that Jesse just did enter the room.
Shall we begin?
Yes. And now for our feature presentation.
Kaiser Air Incorporated, located at Oakland International Airport, Northfield, takes this opportunity to remind us that over the last 10 years, drinking and driving fatalities are down 40%, while teen drinking and driving incidents are down 60%. So to everyone who checks an ID, calls a cab, or tells a friend when to say when, Kaiser Air Incorporated would like to say thank you. By doing things right, you really do make a difference. This important community service announcement has been made possible by Kaiser Air, on the air because they care. That's Kaiser Air Incorporated, located at Oakland International Airport, Northfield, wishing everyone in the Bay Area a safe 2006 by saying, please don't drink and drive.
America California Bank reminds all of our listeners that dangerously low levels of blood exist at area blood banks. If you are a donor or have considered being one, we need your help now. 4 people will benefit from just 1 pint of blood. Donating blood is one of the greatest gifts you can give and the best way to save lives and feel good about helping others. This important reminder is brought to you by everyone at America California Bank in San Francisco. On the air, because they care about the people in our community.
The Church of Scientology takes this opportunity to remind us that the holidays and fun are here. But drinking and driving never mix, no matter what time of year it is. So, to everyone in the Bay Area who checks an ID, calls a cab, or tells a friend when to say when, the Church of Scientology would like to say thank you. By doing things right, you have made a difference this holiday season. This important community reminder has been made possible by the Church of Scientology on air because they care.
Blood supplies throughout the area become dangerously low, possibly delaying needed operations and sometimes endangering lives. So if you've donated blood in the past, or even have considered becoming a donor, please don't keep putting it off. Make an appointment now to give blood by calling 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. Chabot College in Hayward and Las Positas College in Pleasanton knows that the greatest gift you can give is the gift of life.
Kaiser Air Incorporated, located at Oakland International Airport, Northfield, takes the opportunity to remind us this spring season that over the last 10 years, drinking and driving fatalities are down 40%, while teen driving and drinking incidents are down 60%. So, to everyone who checks an ID, calls a cab, or tells a friend when to say when, Kaiser Air Incorporated would like to say thank you. By doing things right, you really do make the difference. This important community service announcement has been made possible by Kaiser Air Incorporated. On the air because they care. That's Kaiser Air Incorporated, located at Oakland International Airport, Northfield, wishing everyone a safe and joyous spring celebration by saying, please don't drink and drive.
What in the hell's diversity?
Well, I could be wrong. But I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War era.
Oh! Great Odin's Raven!
Kind of how we all feel right now after that Warriors victory. Just Great Odin's Raven! Unbelievable victory!
You're welcome, Oakland.
Not even mad, that's just amazing. Anyway, oh, wow. Joined by Corey Adams, who is a listener in Arizona. Sorry, that was a long pause and delay. Antonio looked really confused.
I must say, it's sad not to have Eamon here because he is the MVP-ness of our show.
Good answer. Actually, did you just check on Gmail?
Yeah.
Corey just asked us one more question. Who's the biggest MVP-ness in NBA history? making fun of me. Thank you, Corey. Glad you're listening. Awesome. Anyway, we were talking during the break about Mark Cuban. What a baby. What a little girl Mark Cuban is.
And he's got the baby body, too. He's, you know, kind of big all around. He's got the baby
Right. And for full body analysis, please do log on to our website where Peacock constantly does that. Mostly of men. Mostly of big MV penises.
The MV penis.
We got to stop that. Just ending.
Well, Peacock was saying that that is the one Mav that he found himself having the extra contempt for.
Yeah.
And it happens, you know, when it's your team and you go 6-7 games and games go back and forth, and there's certain players you do develop more respect for, I found as a fan, but then there are certain players where you're like, you know what, I don't like you and I would actually prefer that you not be on my team. And with the Mavs, for me, that guy from last year was Jason Terry. And in this series, it continued watching him play against the Warriors. But this is interesting. You know, the Warriors actually could play all three Texas teams. They could play Houston next and the Spurs in the conference finals. I mean, that is certainly a potential.
No way the Spurs beat the Suns. No way. Not happening.
There you go, trying to start some stuff. And
I think that the Spurs is the worst matchup for the Warriors, for sure. But I really don't – they don't get past either team. And that's kind of the Western Conference final right
now.
Yeah,
we're kind of looking for it, and that's all right.
And luckily there's some good matchups because the Warriors series will be fun to watch just because they're kind of the Cinderella team and everyone enjoys watching them right now. And it should be fun to watch. And then you got the big series with the Spurs and
yeah, that team from the desert.
Yeah, and then in the East, Bulls Pistons might be fun to watch.
Physicality.
Yeah. One more thing on Nelly, real quick. I kind of previewed it, but we didn't actually talk about. How do you guys feel about what I said, real quickly there? That I think that round two is really. I mean, Nelson's had a long career and a successful career in a lot of ways, but round two can be a real big test for the guy because he's pretty old. I think that some of us didn't think he'd ever even coach again before his most recent gig here with the Warriors. Do you guys agree with me that that's a fairly big test? You know, can he get past? Because, like I said, I mean, I think that we're all in agreement here that the Warriors, although in name an 8 seed, have played like a legitimate Western Conference basketball playoff team. And maybe when they get to the finals, they'll have an issue. But, you know, beating the Jazz or Rockets is certainly possible, and it's kind of a hump that it'd be good to see Nelly get over.
Well, we said a couple weeks ago that beating the Mavs would be a totally Nelly thing to do, which is pull a first-round upset, which he's done throughout his career. And even though it came from the mouth of the big baby, there's some accuracy to Mark Cuban saying Nelly enjoys the underdog role a little bit too much.
Mm.
The one time as a favorite when he was a Warriors coach, which was their next-to-last playoff appearance, they were a 3 seed, and they lost to the 6 seed at Sonics, coached by George Karl. And at that point, you kind of realize that when Nelly has expectations, it doesn't go as well as when he just has this lineup of guys that don't really have a position and play hard and all that. So now you're right. Now the whole country, if you don't have a team in the playoffs or if you just root for the underdog, you're behind the Warriors. How could you not be? They've sort of set the table, which says you're not going to win in our place. I mean, other than the Spurs or the Suns, I don't think a Western Conference team can win in Oakland. I don't think the Jazz, from what they've shown so far, they can't even win in Houston, and Houston can't win in Utah. I don't think either one can win here if the Warriors are playing hard. It creates this interesting dynamic of you should win, but Peacock made a great point. How exhausted are they? I mean, every playoff series is different, and here this season is going on and on. The Warriors have exerted a great – I mean, let's not fool ourselves. They had to play great still to beat Dallas. Will they be able to carry that over against an opponent who's not a 67-win team that they haven't had 3 years of success against, that's not Nelly's former employer, that he doesn't have all the scoop on Dirk and all that? Will that continue?
And not only – even if they can keep up the pace, can they still hit 60% of their three-point shots?
I know.
It's just nuts. And so yeah, they're keeping up something that they – it's going to be tough. And can Nelly keep up his pace with the Glenn Livett 12-year?
I mean,
I don't know how many – games he had planned out, you know, because he's got this. I mean, maybe if he was doing Johnny Black, he probably wouldn't get very far. But if he's got, maybe he's going McCallum, maybe he's got some of this
really
old, like extra old stock reserve he's been waiting for, he can pull off another series, I think.
Yeah, no, I think the Scotch will keep him going for a little while. Yeah, hope.
My first thought was that the Warriors should want to play Utah. But I got to tell you, Houston still just looks kind of soft to me when it comes to, because McGrady is their leader. They may not even get out of this. They may lose game seven at home. But if they do win, it's just because they had home court. This is the same team that only had four guys score in a game a week ago. This is the same team that, you know, again, McGrady hasn't shown that he can carry any team he's been on anywhere yet. I think Utah might be the tougher matchup just because Utah is one of the best coached teams in the league. They can sort of play not as fast as the Warriors, but either pace, and they are just so disciplined on both ends of the court. The Warriors aren't as likely to get as many open shots, and they don't have one player that the Warriors can focus on defensively the way that you would a Yao Ming or that they did Dirk Nowitzki.
At the same time, the Warriors have had all kinds of trouble defending Yao Ming, and Yao has completely disappeared in the series against the Jazz. I mean, he's done nothing. I forgot he was even playing basketball right now. It's unbelievable that a player who should be that good has just been such a non-factor.
And has no one to guard him there.
I know.
Now, what happens if he has let's go 6 or 7 against the Warriors, and he has to run up and down the court every night, or would it be Van Gundy slowing the pace down, trying to make every game be in the 70s?
If anyone can do it, it's Jeff Van Gundy.
Yeah, Houston plays ugly.
Yeah,
I mean,
they
let's
do.
Be real. They play very ugly.
And Yao, I think... You know, Yao, to me, has to be a head case. I mean, being 7'5" and having the talent that he has to be, there's got to be mental reasons that he does not succeed at a high level that he could. So to me, I think that based on having seen him play against the Warriors, I think he's got plenty of confidence against the Warriors. So I think the Rockets would play better were they to face the Warriors, thanks largely to Yao being a better basketball player. At the same time, you make a good point. They haven't played in a series before. They haven't played 6 and 7. And you make a darn good point because... Yeah, he's 7'5". He also happens to weigh, what, 350 pounds or something?
He doesn't exactly have foot speed.
Absolutely not, yeah.
And Nelly will start throwing junk defenses at him, triple-teaming him. And who are the guys from Houston that are going to hit all these outside shots? I mean, Dallas had legitimate jump shooters.
Right.
Houston doesn't have established jump shooters. And they're going to play Game 7 Saturday night and then come right back Monday with a Game 1, whereas the Warriors are going to have some time to rest and prepare. The Warriors can jump right in there, steal Game 1 just like they did in Dallas, and have the same scenario of we're going to win all of our home games, and the same Houston team, if it happens to be them, that couldn't win a game in Utah, won't win here. We'll do the same thing. 4-2, eliminate you on our home floor. You know all the remaining Western Conference teams may not be intimidated, but they're very aware of the Oakland Arena or Oracle right now from watching this series on television.
The thing I love about the Warriors matchup with Houston is even if they go a little bigger with Biedrich, he'll stand up to Yao, and he'll probably foul out in 20 minutes. But that's fine, because that's all they need, because he can run, too, for a big man.
Right.
Yeah.
And Yao is not going to be able to hang. I mean, he'll get run down, and they'll have free baskets and easy baskets. But at the same time, they can slow the pace down, and if they can slow the pace down, then it's pretty much over.
And you also made the point about the three-point shots. I mean, gosh, that was one of our big complaints earlier in the year about the Warriors, is on nights when the threes aren't falling, they are an ugly team, and it's not fun to watch, and you don't feel the vibe in the arena. Mm-hmm. You feel like, oh, God, is this really how we play basketball here? So, you know, that can always happen, and we'll see about that kind of stuff. But
and series to series is different. I mean, I've known some Warrior fans that were so upset about losing Game 2, and I'm like, guys, even the best teams don't win every playoff game. I know it's been 13 years since you've been through this, but every series has an ebb and flow. As great as Davis played this last series. He might play very well again, but not as great. But then a guy who didn't play well at all, like Harrington, may have a great series
right.
because a new series is almost like a fresh start for a player.
True. It's true. So I think the Jazz Rockets, we'll see what happens in Game 7. I think that probably we should all, as basketball fans, should be rooting for the Jazz just because Jazz Warriors strikes me as a little more intriguing than Warriors Rockets.
Yeah, and I think you'll have more games at least be in the 90s. Houston plays ugly. They really do.
Hey, and during this run, they beat both teams, right, during the regular season?
They blew out Utah here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the Jazz were struggling down the stretch. All of a sudden, now they found their groove again. If they win Game 7 in Houston, they'll certainly be a team that's flying high. They did beat in Houston the Rockets, but that was the game McGrady got hurt early and didn't play the whole, for three quarters of the game, so you don't really know what to take from it.
I got to say, I love Tracy McGrady. I love the guy as a basketball player. I'd like to see him. We've already seen him have to move from Toronto to Orlando and not work out everywhere. I don't know where it would be a good fit for him, but somewhere it's got to be. I just love to see him succeed somewhere.
Did you see his comment last night?
No.
Where it was, is this Game 7 the biggest game of your career thus far? And he says, no, it's not. Well, guess what, Tracy? It is. I mean,
did he say what was the biggest game?
No, he just, I've been in game sevens before. Yeah, and you got blown out in both.
AAU, I'm 13 years old. My mom and my grandmother in the stands.
Dunked on cousin. Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest game of his career. He's never won a playoff series, so A, this is his chance to do that, and it's also the first game seven he's ever had at home.
That's a weird answer.
It is. Just admit it. Admit, you know what? It is the biggest of my career. And if we don't win, I know I become a failure. So I've got to do everything I can. It doesn't really matter what you say, but just don't sound scared. It's kind of like after Game 5. The minute Avery Johnson pulled the hole, the Warriors have 10,000 pounds of pressure. I'm thinking, they're in your head. You know that you're the underdog now. You know that you need help because you're not good enough to win without the psychology.
Right, right. And he was trying something. It didn't really totally work out.
Because he knew what he was walking into, and it happened.
And the Warriors were in their head the whole time. I mean, Nelly was making smart comments and using the media like he always does. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
What was his quote? What's the worst that can happen?
We lose. That was awesome. See, that's classic Nelly stuff right there.
I love that stuff.
The kind of stuff you love.
Going back to McGrady, though, with that quote, when are players going to realize that what they perceive might be reality, but to everyone else in the world, it's the media's portrayal of what that is, and you say something like that on camera, and it misconstrues everything. And he might not be that worried about this Game 7. You know, maybe he's felt more pressure before.
Well, he needs to be.
But if he loses, I mean, the perception of him is not going
to
be good.
I guess T-Mac's just another one of those guys where maybe mentally he's not, he's not all there. But I love the way the guy plays basketball. He's gut heart. He's gut.
Definitely.
Fortitude, I mean, he knows what he's doing. Yeah, he's a baller.
I mean, when he was younger in Toronto, man, I'd love watching that guy play.
Look at some of the assist numbers that guy's.
Yeah.
Look at some of the assist numbers that guy's put up. Who's he passing to? I mean, there's Yao, but what, Luther Head? Luther Head is a solid ball player, but Juwan Howard?
Luther Head was like the classic guy that every week on our fantasy league, he get dropped and dropped and get signed. He's the last guy that is able to make somebody's roster, but he's not good enough.
Hey, we've got some unfinished business to talk about. We've never talked about anything in fantasy baseball, but we'll get there. Yeah. Yeah, sure. We still got some other playoff series. So,
and now on the other side of the bracket, you said we all have an email question. Is there a basketball related question in the basket?
There should be.
There is, but not specifically on the playoffs.
Okay.
Well, so we'll get back to that.
And also, I believe we decided that the East doesn't exist.
Well,
to us, on this show.
For the most part, we'll just say that Amon so far is looking good because the Bulls, who he picked a good month ago, swept the Heat like it was really not a problem.
Give him credit for the month ago. Give me a little credit because I said if the Bulls can come in there and just hammer the Heat and say and make the Heat realize, wow, we're really old and we kind of suck, then it's going to end like that. And obviously, you can't prove that I would have been right that had it dragged out, the Heat could have won. But
and a message in terms of for the Shaquille O'Neal fan club. Great player, no doubt. Still to this day, obviously can be a force in a game. But in the course of his career, this is the sixth time that he's been swept out of the playoffs.
That's a lot of times to get swept.
That's a lot of times to get swept.
For one of the best players ever.
Yeah, and I was thinking about, the Stephen A. Smith, AI gets you one sort of thing. Allen Iverson can always get you one win in a series. Kobe Bryant can always get you one win in a series. And he did, in each case, AI and the Nuggets got one and Kobe and the Lakers got one. Shaq got swept again. This has happened when he was younger and certainly to very good teams, but there have been times in his career he can't even get one game. And my theory around Shaquille has always been if you frustrate him a little bit, and things don't go his way, he pouts a little bit. And I'm not going to say that he quits, but he doesn't try as hard. And I thought what actually made the Lakers a championship team is that Kobe kind of has that cutthroat, under no circumstances will he ever quit. If you keep punching, he keeps punching back. But, yeah, Miami Heat gone quickly, and quite honestly, for the better of the playoffs.
I think you see that. It's the big brother, little brother thing with Kobe and Shaq. Shaq's kind of the big brother, and he wants to be able to beat you up because he's been able to beat everybody up his whole life.
Yeah.
And then Kobe's kind of the scrapper, and he's kind of the whiny little brother, and he kind of is spoiled a little bit, but he won't give up either. He'll keep punching Big Brother until Big Brother finally gives up.
He's the guy that uses that method. You know when you used to, yeah, you get on your back and then you kick? You put your legs out there and you just kick?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He'll do that if he has to.
Unstoppable defense. I had to use that a couple times in my own life.
Well, the Eastern Conference will finally be watchable.
Three
sweeps of the four series.
Gosh.
So now Chicago-Detroit will be fun. And whoever Cleveland plays, I still say Cleveland beats them. But it will be more interesting than watching Cleveland play Washington.
How brutal could it be? And how long has this been going on? I know the Eastern Conference won the NBA title last year. Okay, skip it. The Eastern Conference has been so brutal to watch for how many years? I'm thinking back to when the Lakers just hammered the Pacers, when the Lakers just hammered the Sixers in the NBA Finals. The Pistons won one in between. But, it has been just atrocious for so long. And it's one of those things where you think that at some point this has to stop, but when is it going to stop?
Well, the MJ years are obviously the last time the East was real dominant.
Even then, I've always felt the West is more fun. I think the West always has been kind of more fun because there's always those run-and-gun teams, Seattle at certain times, Golden State, Phoenix.
Other than that, no, you're right. That Indiana team that the Lakers lost to, that really was a good team with Reggie Miller, and they did fight them hard. But you're right. Even the series that have been competitive, the play has been a little bit ugly because of the Eastern team. Yeah, well,
And Nets-Raptors, I've given Nets-Raptors chances. I really have. They are conveniently on at certain times when I would actually watch a game, and I'm bored enough at certain times that maybe I'd even turn the volume up and try to listen. But Nets-Raptors has just been, it's no fun. The Nets really bother me. You know what I mean? Certain teams have players that you like. It so happens I like Warriors players, which has helped me like them. It so happens that I can watch, say, the Oakland A's baseball team because I like the players that they have. But the Nets players, I appreciate J. Kidd, but Vince Carter, Richard Jefferson seems like kind of a punk to me. Good baller, I'd like him on my team, but I don't know.
And it doesn't help that they're the second team in that market, the Jersey, New York market, and their arena is just antiseptic. they don't even really sell out. There's always empty seats. There's just no, it's kind of like if the Nets keep advancing, we're going to have to continue to see a 90% full arena of people from Jersey that care more about hockey than they do about the Nets.
That's where you say that. Maybe it is the arena, because I like the players you mentioned. I like Kidd. I like Carter on their own, and I like enjoy their game, and I like what Kidd and those two guys can bring, like a fantastic finish, and that's fun to watch, and I love that. But something about that team, maybe it's the uniform, maybe it's the, I don't know.
If they were the Knicks and they were playing at Madison Square Garden, they would love that team. And we would know more about them because they'd be the New York team, you know.
There's something missing there, so maybe that's what it is. They need to.
And they got a head coach that looks like a stockbroker, little Lawrence Frank. Lawrence Frank.
He does look like a little bit of a stockbroker.
The Nets is the team that needs to head on over to Las Vegas and
maybe.
I would love for the Raptors to come back and win that series.
Me too. Those fans deserve more than losing to Vince Carter. After he quit on them, that's not something he can argue. So
yeah.
Hey, wasn't those Amon's teams, Bulls and Raptors?
Raptors, yeah.
He said that, yeah.
Nice work.
We'll see if they can force Game 7 on Sunday tonight in Jersey. We'll finish up then with just the most important series then. What probably is the Western Conference Finals right now, Suns-Spurs.
Yeah. I guess we haven't talked about that. I was trying to avoid that. Dang.
You're not going to get the Spurs by Antonio.
All right,
it's
folks. Well, this
happen.
San Antonio Spurs half hour is brought to you by
Jack Daniels, old
hey,
number
you know
seven.
Before we go to that, let's finish up the East.
Yeah, did we not? Go ahead.
Well, because we didn't talk about your team, the Boston Celtics. And should we start? Because we've been doing the
Go ahead.
We were doing the Odin Durant thing all year. And
pitch it.
You deserve it. Should we start the Yi Jianlan watch?
Officially? I saw that email. That was funny. I like that. Can he play? I'm not.
Dude, 7 feet, 230.
Can he play?
1984 power forward.
Travis Knight was 7 feet, 230.
Hey,
can Ji Lan Lang play?
Good ball handler, has no problem taking opposing defenders off the dribble. Great finisher around the basket. Come on, doesn't force the issue. Plays a smart game. Can play inside outside.
Now, did
for
his
a big
agent
man.
Write this or a scout?
This is a scouting report.
Well, dude, come on, Durant, no question. I mean, we got to win. We got to get the lottery going, first of all.
Yeah.
But provided the Celts end up with number two, Oden or Durant, whoever's left, I don't want any chances on Yi Zheng Li.
Very well said, smooth, without ever really knowing.
Was that his name? I have no idea what his name is.
I'm going to think it was because it sounded good.
Whatever that was close enough. Yi Jianlan, I think is how you say it.
But anyway, no, I'm hoping that that's that the lottery works out. That'll be a big day. And you wanted to – who was the coach we were talking about, the Celtics?
Oh, because Carlisle got fired, asked to leave, whatever, from his good friend Larry Bird in Indiana. Would he be a good coaching option to replace, as you said, Glenn Rivers with the Celts?
No Doc allowed.
It's a fair question. Obviously, I know you want a coaching change, but would a guy like Carlisle be the best situation? He obviously can coach, yet he's never made it to an NBA Finals, and he's left both Detroit and Indiana under circumstances where he wasn't wanted anymore. He was replaced. And each time at least the first time, Detroit replaced him with Larry Brown, who won a title. We'll see what happens with Indiana, whoever they pick. But
a new coach is one of the, in the NBA especially, but it's true of maybe all sports, is one of the toughest things to say, like, I want this guy, because you never want a retread. I don't want Rick Carlisle. But at the same time, when they hire a new one, you're like, well, who is this guy, and how's this going to work? But I would say in this case, I do. I want someone young who can succeed with this team, because I truly feel, God willing, if we do get Durant, and with Paul Pierce, he was injured this season. I think he can be 100% healthy for a full season if there's a reason to be. And I'm not saying anything about Pierce. I think
it came from higher up.
Yeah. And Al Jefferson was a really improving player this year. I think the Celtics can at least show signs next year and be more of a 35-40 win team. Maybe not a great team yet, but I think that there should be a time when they are at the peak. Or excuse me, they're at the valley, at the bottom, and they should start to rise up. And I'd like to have a young coach who, maybe the guy's not that good a coach, but he can start getting credit for it and be along for the ride. You know, not Glenn Rivers. And Carlisle, I always kind of thought Carlisle was a pretty good coach, but NBA coaching, it's almost like Major League relievers. It's so volatile. I mean, Doc Rivers was a coach of the year one time. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
With McGrady.
I don't know about the coaching staff there, but there's one good thing, and it depends on how the lottery turns out, but they can avoid the whole Warriors thing where you're kind of picking 10, 11, and you're kind of in the middle of that whole mess, and you don't get to pick a guy who can turn your franchise around. Celtics have a chance to really go down into the valley and get a guy that can take them up to the peak, you know?
Yeah.
To use your reference. They can really get to that peak, and the Warriors, it took them 15 years to get to the peak again because...
And they had to hire the same coach that they had the last time.
They
could
never
really
get through everything, and they had to trade and scratch and
claw. So how's Casey Jones doing? How's his resume?
Hey, man, let's go back to Casey. As long as it's not ML Carr, we'll go back to one of the old Celtics greats. You know, the thing is that Red Auerbach is like the thing. I mean, if we could get a coach who had a little red, maybe anybody with the last name Auerbach, doesn't he need to be related?
Yeah, what about his offspring? Is there no coaches in there?
He's got some kids, I think, but no high level coaches at least anyway. So that's where we stand on that. We do have to talk about Sun Spurs. I know we've got the NFL draft, Major League Baseball's going on, but we do have to take a break. And when we return, we'll answer some email questions and we'll talk about all those things that we want to talk about.
Should we drop the email address on these fine folks?
We absolutely should. KSFSSports@gmail.com. That is KSFSSPORTS@gmail.com.
There you go. You passed English.
I did. I'm not from Florida.
Ooh.
I should say right now also, May 17th, it's a Thursday, and it is the start of the summer at the Depot here on campus, San Francisco State University. DJ Stylewise and Teeny Kiss, a couple of people who, as far as I know, are here on KSFS The State at certain times. Mm-hmm. Check it out online, ksfs.sfsu.edu. You know if you're listening. Start of the summer at the Depot, and it's going to be free for all ages. And should be a good time here on campus. That's May 17th to Thursday. So we will take a break, come back, and talk more. Owen Grohman, Antonio Kruger, and Brian Peacock on Sports Outside the Mainstream, KSFS, The State.
I am the smartest man alive!
This spring, Pier 39 asks all students to make that commitment to stay in school and graduate. An education along with a degree is one of your greatest gifts to yourself and the first step towards a rewarding career. If you've thought about dropping out of school or already have, remember that you can always enroll in an adult education, technical or vocational program. Education is the gateway to a better life, and you alone hold the key. This reminder is a courtesy of Pier 39 on the air because they care about educating our youth today for the challenges of tomorrow's world.
Yerba Buena Ice Skating and Bowling Center reminds the women of our community that the best defense against breast cancer begins with through annual medical examination and a complete screening mammogram accompanied by regular self-exams. Early diagnosis means that you will have a greater chance for successful treatment, so schedule an appointment today at the clinic or hospital nearest you. And please remember, early detection is the best protection. This important reminder courtesy of Yerba Buena Ice Skating and Bowling Center on the air because they care about the health of the women in our community.
Summer vacation is here, and Econ Incorporated would like to thank our listeners who are doing their part to combat drinking and driving during the long summer days. By checking IDs, calling a cab, or giving someone a ride home, we can make a difference and save lives. Please don't drink and drive. This important message is brought to you by Econ Incorporated, wishing all our listeners a safe and happy summer vacation.
It's the most vile, heartless, evil, diabolical beast known to all the human race. It's the Circle Pit. Playing the heaviest and most brutal music around.